Happy holidays, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth podcast. And so the end is near edition, as we look back at perhaps the most unbelievable finish in the 822 regular season or postseason games the Cincinnati Bengals have ever played. I am dead serious. They scored two touchdowns and added two two-point conversions in the final 29 seconds of regulation to force overtime before eventually losing to the Miami Dolphins 38-35, a loss that gives the Bengals the number one pick in next year's draft. Coming up, you'll hear radio replays, locker room comments from players and coaches, and Dave Lapham will join me for post-game analysis. Finally, in this week's Fun Facts conversation, we'll meet the person under the pads as I'll talk to a big man with a big personality, rookie offensive lineman Fred Johnson. All of that is straight ahead, but first, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or Podbean. It's the greatest thing since loyal fans. It's been a tough year for Bengals fans, and I appreciate each and every one of you who listens to this podcast, goes to games at Paul Brown Stadium, attends our weekly radio shows, and most of all, keeps the faith. We know it's not always easy, so thank you for hanging in there. And here's hoping that better days are just around the corner. Now let's get to Sunday's game. After an 0-7 start, the Miami Dolphins have gone 4-4 since, led by 37-year-old quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick and a coaching staff that's not afraid to dip into its bag of tricks. I formation backfield. Fitzpatrick fakes a handoff. He throws. It is caught and then dropped. It's a touchdown. They're saying that the big lineman who caught the football, Christian Wilkins, defensive tackle out of Clemson, first-round draft pick this year, had it long enough for the touchdown to count. So the Dolphins' first drive ended with a TD pass to a defensive lineman. Their second drive featured more razzle-dazzle. Here's a run. Now it's a pitch back to Fitzpatrick, and he flings it high and deep down the middle of the field for Parker. He makes the catch at the 10, and he'll be brought down around the 6-yard line by Will Jackson.
The flea flicker, and the flea flicker works.
It certainly did. It led to a 7-yard touchdown pass to Devontae Parker that gave Miami a 14-0 lead 10 minutes into the game. A Randy Bullock field goal put the Bengals on the scoreboard in the second quarter before the Dolphins quarterback struck again. Fitzpatrick takes the snap. He's looking right, now scans over the middle of the field, scrambles right, throws it for the end zone. It is caught. Gesicki for the touchdown.
Man, that's a broken coverage, and they just totally lose track of Gesicki. I mean, there is nobody in the deep quadrant of the football field, and Ryan Fitzpatrick hits his big tight end.
Fitzpatrick passed for 252 yards in the first half. Meanwhile, the Bengals had 5-3 and outs and went 0-7 on third down conversions before ending the half on a positive note.
Harris ready to snap it back. He fires it back. Huber puts it down. Bullock launches the kick.
There.
It is straight enough. It is good.
Yeah.
A franchise record 57-yard field goal by Randy Bullock. It leaves 2 seconds on the clock, and the Bengals trail 21-6.
The Bengals open the second half with another three and out, and when the Dolphins answered with an 87-yard drive, it looked like the rout was on.
Empty backfield, 5 wide, 2nd and 4 from the Bengals 13. Fitzpatrick looking for his 4th touchdown pass, scrambling around behind the line, throws into the back of the end zone, caught by Gesicki for another Miami touchdown. Darquez Denard was there, but Gesicki's bigger, stronger, and on that play, better.
Boxed him out.
It was 28-6, and considering the fact that the Bengals had not scored a second-half touchdown in their previous 7 games, a comeback didn't seem likely. The first thing the Bengals had to do was end that streak of 42 second-half possessions without a TD going back to October 20th.
Three receivers left, one right. Dalton back to throw. He's going to fire toward the left sideline. And Boyd, he makes the catch. Sprinting down the sideline. Lunges toward the pylon.
Yes.
Touchdown, Bengals. The drought ends on a fourth down touchdown pass to Tyler Boyd. And that is 200 AD. Andy Dalton has just become the first quarterback in history to throw 200 touchdown passes in a Bengals uniform.
A two-point conversion attempt failed, and the Bengals went to the fourth quarter trailing 28-12. With 11 minutes left in regulation, a touchdown run by Myles Gaskin put the Dolphins up by 23 in the fourth quarter. The Bengals have never won a game after trailing by more than 21. But in this game, they kept battling back.
Dalton drops back to throw. Throws over the middle. Nice. And is caught for a touchdown. C.J. Uzomah running the skinny post. The ball thrown with perfect timing by Andy Dalton. And C.J. Uzomah hauls in his first touchdown catch of the year.
Yeah, he dropped one that could have been a touchdown catch. That one he snagged.
The deficit was 16 with 6:11 to go. The Dolphins answered with a 10-play drive that took 3 minutes off the clock and ended it with a 47-yard field goal attempt that could have just about sealed the victory. However, Jason Sanders' kick was wide left, and the Bengals still had a chance. Right, C.J. Uzomah?
What we needed to do was go down, score, get a two-point conversion, get an onside kick, and score again. We had to score as fast as possible in this drive because, I mean, obviously we have plays in certain situations to you know, push the ball down the field, but I knew that the first drive was the most important when they missed the field goal because we wanted to get and keep as much time on the clock as possible.
The Bengals were out of timeouts, and while they did score, they weren't able to leave much time on the clock.
Two receivers right, one left. Uzomah in a three-point stance to the right. He's going to go into the end zone for a pass. Here's a slant.
Nice.
It is caught by Boyd, and he's into the end zone for a Bengals touchdown. He got the ball across the plane. You only need the tiniest portion of the football to go over the front edge of the white stripe. That's all it takes. And I think that's all Tyler Boyd did for the Bengals touchdown.
The Bengals were down by 10 with only 29 seconds to go.
Dalton catches the shotgun snap, looking for Eifert.
Nice.
Throws. It is caught for a two-point conversion. And the Bengals have a slim hope. Just a glimmer of hope.
Their hope depended on recovering an onside kick. The Bengals hadn't done that in their previous 8 attempts over a span of 149 games.
Here comes the onside kick. It bounces way up in the air.
They got it.
It is loose, and the Bengals have it. The Bengals recover at
how
the 46
it?
As Jordan Evans comes away with the ricochet. It is the first successful onside kick that the Bengals have pulled off in 9 years, and they have a puncher's chance with 29 seconds to go.
Stanley Morgan knocked it backward to Jordan Evans, who discussed his recovery.
Yeah, just ball popped up right to me, and I secured it and, you know, gave the team opportunity to go down there, and as they did, they score.
First onside kick the Bengals have pulled off since 2010. On that play, are you specifically looking for a bounce back? Are you trying to be a few yards kind of behind where the ball is?
I mean, it's just onside kick, so everyone's looking for the ball.
The Bengals had it at their own 46 with 28 seconds left. A 29-yard pass to Tyler Boyd put them at the Dolphins 25 before a spike stopped the clock with 4 seconds to go. Enough time for a Hail Mary.
4 seconds to go. The Bengals are 25 yards away. The Dolphins put 8 defenders in the end zone. Dalton back to throw. Has time. Looking. Throws toward the end zone. Into a crowd.
Oh, got it!
It is caught!
Got it!
By Tyler Eifert! I can't believe what I have just seen!
Oh-ho!
The Bengals are a two-point conversion away from potentially forcing overtime as Dalton's 25-yard touchdown pass is caught by a leaping Tyler Eifert. Bengals fans' heads are about to explode.
Are they still going to convert on the two-point conversion?
The ball was placed at the 2-yard line with no time on the clock.
Dalton looking to throw, looking, scrambling to the right. He could run for two.
Get in.
He's charging toward the end zone. He's in. He has tied the game at
that?
35, and this game is going to overtime.
Here's C.J. Uzomah.
I felt like we were just riding a wave, and it felt incredible. You know, obviously to to be able to pull something like that off. But at the same time, you know, you got to flip a quick switch and say, okay, well, we still have overtime. But no doubt, I mean, when that happened, it was electric on the sideline and in my mind, and I'm sure a lot of other people's minds, we were going to go down and win.
But fittingly, this season, that's not how it turned out. The Bengals had two possessions in overtime and were not able to get a single first down. On the Dolphins' third drive in OT, a 28-yard pass from Fitzpatrick to Isaiah Ford put Miami in field goal range.
From the left hash, a 37-yard try to win the game in overtime for Miami. Sanders is ready. The snap, the put down, the swing of the leg, the kick is up.
It's good.
It is good. The Dolphins win, and the Bengals have the first pick in next year's draft.
And as the season has gone, mentioned it earlier, the Bengals, instead of doing just enough to win, do just enough to lose.
The impact of this week's loss on next year's draft was impossible to ignore. The Bengals can now try to beat the Browns next week without anybody having to worry that it could cost them the number one pick. As a result, many Bengals fans weren't exactly heartbroken after the loss in Miami, but for players like Uzama, it wasn't cause for celebration.
I love our fans. I respect them, but respectfully, like, I don't really care about any of that. I'm here to win, and we're here to win, and we want to win for these coaches. We want to win for the brothers that have put their blood, sweat, and tears into being in this position. And you know, we're giving God-given abilities for a reason, and we have to use them. We're not just going to go out there and lay an egg or lay down or any of that. You know, we're here to compete, and that's what we're trying to show. All that outside noise is outside noise, and I respect the heck out of every single person in here who played their hearts out.
The final score, 38-35, as the Bengals fell to 1-14. Here's Eifert on an incredible comeback that came up short.
We scored 6 points in the first half, and it just felt like we couldn't do anything. Guys, just keep fighting, and that's all you can really ask for. No one gave up and laid down, and obviously we'd rather win the game than say we tried hard. But at least we got the fight. We got that part down.
How about you with that Hail Mary, man? Went up over everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those plays that you practice all the time, but very rarely does it actually play out, just because the odds are against you. But it never happens. Like, you go out there and you do your best, and you're going to try to make it happen, but so many things have to go right, and it just sucks for us not to come all the way back and not get it done in the end.
Dalton threw a career high 56 passes, completing 33 for 396 yards, 4 touchdowns, and no picks. After the game, I spoke to the guy who snapped him the football.
In the locker room with Bengals center Trey Hopkins, what an unbelievable finish. Down by 23 in the fourth quarter, you fought back and got it to OT. What was going through your mind?
Really, I got to give a big shout out to Andy. Andy's, since I've been a part of this offense, Andy's always been the heart. I feel like when times are going tough, and today was no exception, that guy, he never stops believing. Always encouraging, always letting us know, as long as we have time, we have a shot. And I mean, he told us at halftime, still wasn't going right. Told us in the third quarter, things still weren't going right. And even to the fourth quarter, he's still saying the same thing, just believe. And then he went out there and made stuff happen.
After they missed the field goal, when they're up by 16, I kind of ran through what was required. Got to score 2 touchdowns, 2 two-point conversions, require an onside kick. I listed it without even really thinking it could happen. Are you doing the same kind of math in your head?
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of guys are. But you're looking at the time, how much time you got, what could possibly happen, what we need to happen. And when you list things like that, it kind of looks like, I mean, you got your back up against the wall. It doesn't look very probable. But, I mean, you got extraordinary people in here, get extraordinary things done. And I'm very proud of them.
The outcome was obviously not what you wanted, but do you walk out of here feeling at least somewhat good about the comeback?
Yeah, you feel good about the comeback. Definitely, it was exciting. Like I said, Andy brought us a spark that we definitely needed. But then, without even watching the film, then you think about, I mean, you had three quarters. You had three quarters where we just were not very productive, we're not very good on offense, that put us in that position. So, it's good and bad, but you can't be unrealistic and get too excited about the end when you had the whole game to be productive.
And the opportunity. You did have the ball in overtime a couple of times, right, and just couldn't get it going.
Exactly. So there's things to clean up. Yeah, that was a bright spot. It was exciting. But, I mean, there's a lot of room for improvement.
Got a game left. It's at home. It's against an AFC North rival. A chance to finish on a positive note.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we owe those guys. It's at our house, and it's the last shot. It's the last shot of the 2019 Bengals going out and playing together. We've been through a lot this season. I mean, each and every guy in this building, on this team, on the roster, as it's moved throughout the season, I mean, fought through something personally and on the team, and we owe it to each other to go out with a bang and get it up.
Now time to hear from head coach Zach Taylor, who spent about 4 minutes with Lapp after the game.
Coach, unbelievable. I don't think I've seen 16 points scored in 33 seconds at any level of football. This is the first time I've seen it. Have you experienced anything like that before?
Not that I can think of. It's a resilient group, you know, and it speaks to the character we have in the locker room, that here we are in week 16. There's not a lot to play for other than pride and for each other. And to be down, 23 points there with 6 minutes left to fight back in all three phases speaks to what we know, what kind of character we got in this locker room.
When you think of the laundry list of things that had to go right, I mean, special teams, defense, I mean, offense, and Andy ends up 33 for 56, 396 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, has the 2-point conversion. Tyler Boyd, 9 catches, 128 yards, couple touchdowns. Eifert makes the, you know, the spectacular play on the Hail Mary. I mean, everybody stepped up.
They did, you know, we had guys dropping like flies, you know, and so starters were having to play on special teams, guys were having to play more reps on offense than they thought they were going to play, and I know they were tired, I know they were hurt, winded, whatever it is, and they gave us everything they had.
You know, you're talking about two resilient guys at the quarterback position, Ryan Fitzpatrick and Andy Dalton. There's more similarities and differences between those guys, isn't there?
Yeah, they're competitive, they're great leaders for their team, they're like coaches out there playing the position. You know, I saw him checking a million times. Andy checked a bunch. So two guys that you got a lot of confidence in at the quarterback position.
So I know, obviously, a big lesson to be learned is, and I've said this to a couple of players, as Yogi Berra said, it ain't over till it's over. I mean, is that the biggest thing to take out of this football game?
Some point this is going to serve us well in the future. You know, that we know that we can fight back from anything. As long as we believe and just do your job. You know, I think in the first half, guys were really pressing, trying to make plays. And once we settled down and guys just did their job, let the plays come to them, the game slowed down and we were able to get back in it. But, you know, we just got to learn from those lessons.
Yeah, like you said in the first half, I know it was in the first half, you had 5 drives that were 3-and-out drives. And then in the second half, particularly down the stretch in the fourth quarter, I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick had 150 yards passing in the first quarter. I mean, he had 250 at the half. Andy's numbers were just the opposite. I mean, so you know, it's one of those dynamics where guys feed off each other. Once somebody makes a play, say, I can do the same thing.
It's as simple as they were capitalizing all the one-on-one opportunities they had in the first half, and we were not. We were losing them all on offense and defense. And so you're right. They started fast. They started hot. They punched us in the mouth, and we didn't respond well early on. But our guys settled in and showed who they really are.
What did you say to the guys at halftime in a situation like that? And I know, you know, we couldn't really hear what you were saying, but we could hear you were animated after the game in the locker room. And I don't expect you to tell us, you know, in-house stuff, what you're talking to your team about. But overall, if you could deliver what kind of message you were given at halftime and after the game.
Well, just as I said, you know, we were losing the one-on-ones. We just had to slow down, be disciplined with your technique, and let the plays come to you, let the action come to you. Stop pressing so hard, trying to make plays, and just use your technique. They're playing man coverage on defense. They're jam front. Like, we know what they're doing. We know what we got to do to execute to win. And our guys, you know, really, I think, took the message to heart there in the second half.
One game left, and it's a division rival, the Cleveland Browns. They lose today. They can't have a winning season. You know, it's going to be a couple of football teams that are going to be, I think, you know, disappointed but still want to go out on a high note. You know, it's a big division rivalry.
We're going to be hungry. We're finishing at home against a divisional team that we felt like we didn't give them our best the last time we played them. And so there's plenty left for us to play for here.
After Lapp finished talking to Zach, he joined me for post-game analysis, and we discussed
the craziest finish Lapp has witnessed in more than three decades as a Bengals broadcaster.
Never seen it. You know, all the guys I talked to, I asked, you know, have you ever played in a game or seen a game like that? And they really, I couldn't recall any. Andy said maybe one close in high school, but not quite like that. When you think of everything that had to happen for them to get it done, the onside kick, the Hail Mary by Tyler Eifert that's answered, you know, the scoring two touchdowns and two-point conversions. The checklist is long, and for them to get it done and make plays. And everybody I talked to was so frustrated because in the first half they had 5 3-and-outs, and they were doing the, Miami's doing the same thing, man coverage. And, you know, they're saying, you know, just let's just make plays. But it seemed like guys were pressing. You know, guys were just trying to force plays, make plays. And once they just calmed down and relaxed, and once one play was made, it kind of opened the dam. And everybody started making plays. You know, everybody kind of fed off of that. And then the whole thing, you know, just turned into what it turned into down the stretch. But Miami really didn't do anything differently. The Bengals just didn't get it done in the first half. And they got it done big time in the second half, particularly in the fourth quarter. And when you look at it, I mean, Fitzpatrick had 150 yards passing in the first quarter, 250 at the half. And Andy, his numbers weren't like that. And then they flipped, you know, just flipped completely around. So it was a very, very interesting football game for sure. I think everybody felt like if they won the coin flip, they would have won the game. But they all say, hey, look, we should have still won the game. We had the momentum. Even if we don't win the coin flip, we got to win that football game.
They did have two possessions in overtime, so they had a chance.
Yep.
Andy Dalton wound up with 396 passing yards, 4 touchdown passes. They all came in the second half. Seems like there's strong possibility that Andy is not going to be back with Cincinnati next year. We'll see in the offseason. But if this turns out to be one of his last games in a Bengals uniform, that second half was about as well as he's played.
You know, the guy, the other quarterback, we've seen Ryan Fitzmagic do his Fitzmagic, you know, and it was Andy that did a lot of magic. So I think there's more similarities than differences, you know, between those two guys at the quarterback position, and see those two, you know, like they're almost coaches of their respective teams, not just quarterbacks. You know, there's leadership qualities, there's intelligence, there's all those things, and, you know, guys believe in them and guys trust them. And so it was interesting to see, will Ryan Fitzpatrick be back as a Dolphin if they take a quarterback with one of their first round picks? Will Andy Dalton be back as a quarterback if the Bengals take a quarterback with their first pick, which they've now got the first pick of the draft? All these questions are to be answered, but it was interesting to see these two guys in a prideful way, you know, down the stretch of their respective careers, potentially, with these two teams play the way they played.
How about Randy Bullock? A week after that embarrassing onside kick attempt that spun to a stop after 5 yards, he sets a franchise record with a 57-yard field goal. That was done once in a playoff game by Mike Nugent, but this officially goes in the book as a new Bengals record. And then a perfectly executed onside kick to give the Bengals a chance.
I mean, the put the ball on its side and the helicopter deal that went 5 yards was mocked in almost every football show I saw during the course of the week. I mean, mocked. And now, I'm sure they won't, because it was executed so perfectly, it went from being mocked to this onside kick, you know, the second bounce getting the height. And Stanley Morgan made a great effort to get after the ball and had possession, and then just lost the possession a little bit, and Jordan Evans is right there to get it bouncing off the turf. I mean, think of the three things that had to happen just on the onside kick to be executed the way it was executed. So hopefully Randy Bullock gets some credit with some of these football shows, as opposed to, you know, being mocked for his performance the week before.
On defense, Darius Phillips had an interception and played well after Will Jackson left with an injury.
He really did. I mean, Darius Phillips, he provides sticky coverage. He gets his head snapped around, finds the football. I think we know he can return the football. He provides some diversity and skill set, you know, to the football team. So I think his career's arrowing up. There's no question about it. And you know, a lot of guys made plays when they needed to give the team a chance to win this football game. I mean, it didn't look very good for quite a while, but down the stretch it was it may have been as crazy a game in the fourth quarter as I think I've seen, I don't know, maybe forever.
One game left at home against the Cleveland Browns has no impact on the draft as far as the Bengals concerned. They can try to go out with a victory at home against Cleveland, and everybody in the stands will be rooting for that outcome for Cincinnati.
No question. I mean, it's a division opponent. Don't have a division game this season. It's been quite a while since we won a division game. didn't get a road win this year. It's the fourth team that didn't get that done in franchise history. You do not want to be a team that doesn't get a division win for an entire season. You know, that's not something that you want to hang your hat on. So, you know, hopefully the way this game ended, some momentum will carry over from that, and they'll play, you know, at a high level for the entire football game against the Cleveland Browns, because they owe them for sure.
There's one game left in the season, and after that, we will be doing a lot of draft analysis between now and April 23rd. At the moment, most of the draft gurus have LSU quarterback Joe Burrow and Ohio State defensive end Chase Young as the top two players on the board. Recently, I asked Pro Football Focus analyst Sam Monson if the first pick should be Burrow, Young, or somebody else.
I think it should be Joe Burrow. You know, he is the best college quarterback right now. He's the guy that will be the best quarterback prospect on the board at the time. I think it was close between him and Tua, but I think he's had such an incredible season statistically. He's putting up some accuracy numbers that we've never seen from quarterbacks before. And the bottom line is, nothing moves the needle more than a quarterback. You know, unless you have the quarterback, almost nothing else matters. So Chase Young is having his own incredible season. He's putting up the best pass rushing season we've ever seen in college football. He's probably the best player both in the country and in the draft. But if you don't have a quarterback, Chase Young is not going to win you games. You know, he may be worth a win, two wins above replacement. Whereas Joe Burrow, if he pans out, he's the guy that will propel you from, you know, contending for the number one overall pick to being right back in a playoff conversation if he works out.
It's one of many key decisions the Bengals will be facing this offseason. But first things first, on Sunday, the Bengals end the season against the 6-9 Cleveland Browns, who will not only miss the playoffs for the 17th straight year, but the Sports Illustrated preseason cover boys are guaranteed of having a worse record than last year when they went 7-8-1. Now time for this week's Fun Facts interview, where we get to know the person under the pads. This week, it's a rookie offensive lineman who got his most playing time as a pro this week in Miami. Time for some fun facts with offensive lineman Fred Johnson from West Palm Beach, Florida, on the East Coast, a little bit north of Miami. What do you love about your hometown?
The weather, first and foremost. I love the weather about the city. And it's just, I just love it because it's home, you know. The sunshine, the rain, all of it.
Fred, you are not a guy who grew up spending your whole life dreaming of playing in the NFL, correct?
No, not at all. Not even at all. We used to just watch games. Nobody would ever think that any of us sitting in that room, me, my cousins, and my granddad, and us, would, like any one of us would be in an NFL game, let alone on the NFL roster.
I've heard you described as being a late bloomer. Is that accurate?
Late bloomer is accurate. It's very accurate.
Did the coaches more or less have to drag you out there to get you to start playing football?
My junior year, like, one of the coaches got tired of seeing me going to the library every day at lunch. I used to play video games and stuff. He was like, just come out one day. And then the team, my teammates, really the ones who, you know, let me keep with it, you know, made me want to come back out there every day. So really it was a teammates thing, just the whole chemistry of a team was really made me stick around.
So you didn't play varsity football in high school until you were a senior. Did you start to love it, or did you see the opportunities that might be there?
I loved it. Like, just that senior spring, I promise you, it was one of the hardest springs I ever went through, you know, high school, because I only played, like, 1 year. So that first spring that I went through, it was really, you know, just a bonding moment with me and my teammates, you know. And just that senior season was, like, I got open, like, my eyes opened to the opportunities of going to college and doing something that nobody in my family ever done, you know. So it really didn't start processing until like the end of the year when I had to, you know, get qualified in all my grades and stuff before I can even be able to go to college, because I got accepted into college, but they didn't know if I was going to graduate high school. So It was one of those deals, and just the love of the game and the opportunities that it had, I could go get an education for free, so I took it.
So you love playing video games in the library. What were some of the other things you liked to do when you were young?
Nothing really too crazy. Like, you know, all the basic stuff that, you know, little kids like doing, playing outside and stuff like that. Really took a liking to just video games, like growing up, just trying to be the best at that because I didn't really have to do much. So it was pretty easy. Fell in love with, I wanted to be a basketball player like my uncle, but that didn't turn out any too well because of the conditioning for it. So when I fell into football, I kind of loved it because of the physicality with it. There's something that basketball lacked.
All right. You mentioned your uncle, Otis Thorpe, yeah. 17 years in the NBA, an all-star, an NBA champion. Yeah. How much did you know about his career growing up?
Really, just because how tall he was, we knew like instantly, like he was, you know, a very famous, well, veteran person. And just his history and just like what he did to get to where he was at now is, you know, something I admired, something I wanted to do. Like, I always wanted to play basketball. And just when, like, it didn't work out, I was kind of bummed, you know. But I think I found my calling in football. And just, you know, he tries to mentor me, like, here and there. You know, sometimes he'll call me out the blue and just ask me, like, how things going. Mm-hmm. You know, give me little advice that I need. You know, nothing too much to weigh me down, but just enough to keep me, like, above my head above water and stuff. So it's pretty cool.
So 1 year of varsity football in high school, and just like that, you're offered scholarships by great college football programs. You wind up with the Florida Gators. And you actually started a couple of games as a true freshman, even only playing 1 year of high school football. Your head had to be spinning.
When we first got to college, I went to college just because, like, just the off the competition I was there. I knew like 10 guys was going to be enrolled that year because they was down offensive linemen, and fell in love with the SEC as soon as I stepped foot into the stadium. So spring, like, I was like, man, I love it here. Like, I need to come here. And then, again, thrown into the fire, like he just said, as a true freshman. Was kind of scary, kind of whirlwind. Freshman year kind of flew by, barely remember. But I remember my first game. I was about to play in, I think it was New Mexico State. And one of my teammates came, like, right before I was going to go in. He was like, are you scared? I was like, no, I ain't scared. I was like, why would you ask that? Like, you know, great experiences there. I learned the game as the years went on and really got a hold of it now. So. The first few games was really tough.
I've been to Gainesville, great college campus, great college life. What did you enjoy the most about being at the University of Florida?
The memories I have. You look at football, you look at social life, the friends I've made, the coaches I've met, you know, and interacted with. You'll never find no type of anything like that anywhere else. Like the Florida campus, the fans, especially the fans. The fans are literally what makes you want to go there. I really committed because I seen, we went to a basketball game, like, during my visit, and I seen this older lady just clapping, like cheering on the game, and, like, just not even watching. It's like she was walking back to her seat, and I was like, I love it here. I can't. So really the atmosphere of just the campus itself, you know, the team, the history, the pride in it, it really sticks with me now.
All right, so after college, you sign as a college free agent with the Pittsburgh Steelers. You make the team out of training camp. And then in October, they tried to move you from the roster to the practice squad, and the Bengals snatched you up. Was that difficult, considering that you were really just getting established in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, that's difficult. Like I said, I thank everybody at the Steelers organization for giving me a shot, you know, to come out and show what I can do. And really, I took it upon myself, like, to go to Pittsburgh when there was other options there, the history of Pittsburgh and the physicality that they bring, like, that their team is known for. I wanted to be a part of it. And when they waived me, it was difficult. You know, I had to accept the fact that I was being waived and that I could be back on the practice squad soon. But, I mean, it was just it was a tough process. But right when I got here, I felt like, you know, I could really make a home here too, so. It was no big deal.
A few more fun facts with Fred Johnson. With the Bengals, so far, you've been used primarily as a sixth offensive lineman, but a couple of games ago against Cleveland, you were the primary option on a pass. You're going to try to trick the Cleveland Browns and throw it to the big fella. To their credit, they sniffed it out and they covered you pretty well. But how exciting was that possibility for you?
Oh, so bad they was covering me. I was like, come on. Like, come on. We can, like, let me have my moment. Like, at least one time in my career. And it was so exciting. Like, I wanted to score a touchdown. And then I was like, I was very nervous, like, leading up to the end, just about running that route. You know, all my teammates giving me, like, you know, like, joking with me about it and stuff. Like, don't drop the ball, don't drop the ball. And I was like, I'm not even going to drop the ball. I just think about what I'm going to do after I score the touchdown. So when I seen that two of them was like on me, and I was like, oh Lord, this is my dream going bye bye. So I mean, it is what it is. It was fun, like they called it, you know, and I ran that route as fast as I could too.
Do you have a good celebration planned?
Not right now. No, I probably might just spike the ball and run after and grab the ball to put in like my memory case or something like that. But no, not really. Nothing too crazy right now.
All right, a couple more fun facts with Fred Johnson. What do you like to spend your money on?
Shoes, probably now. I like buying shoes and stuff, clothes. You know, you can never have too many clothes. But I just spent like some of my money on 401k plans. So I don't really like. I like video games. I buy any video game. I like. I don't really. I'm not really too promised in like jewelry and stuff right now. Not yet. I'm a rookie. I wasn't drafted, so trying to save my money. But really, video games and shoes.
Do you have a hidden talent?
I think I can sing, but nobody else thinks I can sing. So
would you like to prove it?
Nope, not at all. Not on the audio recording. Maybe in person, you know, with like blaring music in the background. But nothing really too crazy.
What are you terrible at?
I am terrible at like dancing. I don't think I'm terrible, but I'm not really good. I'm not really good at it. So when I try to do it, I do it to the best of my ability. I do what I know I can do. I don't try to go out my way, you know.
Stick to what you know.
Stick to what you know, exactly. That's about it. People say I'm terrible at cooking, but I don't believe them.
As long as you like what you cook.
That's exactly right.
All right, final fun fact. If you could meet anybody in history, athlete, actor, politician, religious figure, whatever, historical figure, who would that person be?
It'll have to be like Malcolm X or Martin Luther King, one of the two, or both of them. Pick their brain a little bit, you know. If I could meet anybody living, it'll probably be Will Smith, just because of the knowledge he has. Not too many people see it, but I feel like he's a knowledgeable person, you know.
He can do it all.
He can do it all. He can act, you know, most things. You know, he can do everything. That would probably be it.
All right. This is fun. You're off the hot seat. Appreciate the time.
Appreciate you.
We want to remind you to come out and join us at our final on-location radio show this week. On Friday afternoon, Buffalo Wings and Rings Beckett Ridge location will host the Bengals Pep Rally show from 3 to 6. A guest will join us in the final hour, and we'll have plenty of giveaways, too. That's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe, and if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. Those 5-star ratings help more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.